Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Football Friday on The Fan.
It's a man's game now.
This is a Football Friday edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Football Friday with Danny and Dusty on 1080.
We have great expectations.
The Fan.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty here on this Friday. I'm down in Eugene. Will Ortner back up in the studios holding down the ship. Thanks for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it's on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AMTheFan, or youtube.com/1080AMTheFan. Party on, you party animals on YouTube. This is my last show of the year. Because I'm heading down to Pasadena for the Rose Bowl. Oregon, Ohio State coming up on New Year's Day in the college football playoff quarterfinals, a rematch of an October 12th game here in Eugene where the Ducks held off Ohio State 32-31, an all-timer and an incredible game. And as I was going through and just kind of looking up the numbers on, you know, they always say it's hard to beat a great team twice. And it is. I mean, it is incredibly difficult to beat a great team two times in one season. Some from the Dayton Daily News popped up. And this newspaper was founded in 1898 in Ohio. It was founded after the last time Ohio State lost two games in the same season to the same team. The last time the Ohio State Buckeyes lost to the same team twice in a season was in 1894 to Wittenberg College.
Yeah, they're a power, aren't they?
That's a very long time. But when you think about it, it's really hard to face the same team twice, especially in the Big Ten, because when they had their two divisions, remember when they called them the Leaders and the Legends Division?
Who could forget?
It was so widely mocked and ridiculed that they said, we're going to change that to East and West. It was a top-heavy East and West, right? To where you didn't have a lot of rematches because Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State were all on the same side, right? So finding those rematches, really hard to do. And Ohio State's been really damn good at football. That's the other part of this, is that you don't have very often where Ohio State loses two times to the same team in a year. But going back to 1894, that's 130 years ago. That is so long ago. It's so long ago. In fact, the Dayton Daily News says touchdowns were worth 4 points, field goals worth 5, and extra points were worth 2 points.
Gotta love inflation.
Back then, well, deflation on the field goals. Field goals went from 5 to 3 points. They said, we want less kickers. Extra points, 2 points? They're like, no, we don't want the kickers to mean this much. We're going to give touchdowns 6 points. that just puts it into perspective how long it's been since Ohio State has lost twice to the same team in a season. But as we sit there and we look at recently in college football, right, just this year, we have Georgia and Texas playing two times. Mm-hmm. And Georgia came out on the right side of that both times. Last year, Oregon and Washington, they played two times in the same season. I think in both of these instances, we can say all four teams, great teams. And the same team won in both of those games. Historically speaking, you do see more splits in the same matchup twice in a season. But recently, you've seen actually the same team win in two of the most high-profile and marquee matchups that we've seen. But as it pertains to Oregon and Ohio State, that game that we had here on October 12th was an all-timer. I mean, it was one of the best games in the history of Autzen Stadium. It was a back-and-forth affair. You had lead change after lead change. You had two heavyweights swinging and throwing their best shot. And I think as you look at this game, the thing that's going to intrigue me the most is, and we've talked about this ad nauseum with Ohio State, is their offensive line. Because in that game against Oregon, they lose their starting left tackle, and they run the ball for under 2 yards per carry after that. You fast forward, they also lose their starting center for the season in practice with a ruptured Achilles. And those are two massive injuries. Two most important positions on your offensive line. You lost both of those guys. And they are not going to be in the Rose Bowl, and they're not going to be suiting up again. On the flip side of that, you look at Oregon and their defensive line. I think we have seen the best football from the defensive line since that Ohio State game, right? Where you look at Jordan Birch did not play in that game. And we saw what it has meant to Mateo Uiagalelei, mm-hmm. and kind of his rise as one of the preeminent pass rushers in the Big Ten since that game. Derek Harmon and Jamari Caldwell, I think we forget how early in the season that was, of them still getting used to. And I thought what we've seen out of Derek Harmon is one of the most dominant interior defensive linemen in college football. Mm-hmm. And that matchup with Ohio State's offensive line, which looked absolutely incredible against Tennessee, and Oregon in their defensive line, that is going to be the telling matchup in this game.
Yeah, when I look at this one, the reason why I feel pretty confident about Oregon coming out on top in this game is because of that D-line matchup. Like, Oregon was the weaker opponent in the D-line O-line matchup in the last game. Ohio State full strength, yep. Oregon obviously not. Mateo Uiagalelei then goes out and dominates your left tackle. And I guess I shouldn't say dominates, but he dominates in key spots. When Oregon needed a key third down stop, who's the one that won their 1-on-1 matchup? It was Uiagalelei, and he gets that big stop on Judkins, and that forces an Ohio State punt early in that second half. Later on, when you needed a sack, who's the one guy who got to Will Howard? Mateo Uiagalelei, and he did it against that left tackle. Now you're getting the third string left tackle. You're going to have Harmon, who, by the way, had maybe the most impressive play you've ever seen out of a D lineman, save for Jadeveon Clowney when he was taken on Michigan in the Outback Bowl, where he literally just comes in. He was going to get double-teamed on that play. Like, if you go back, you watch the All-22, Derek Harmon is supposed to be double-teamed on that play. He beats both guys, gets into the backfield, and still has the wherewithal to strip the ball while he's laying an absolute licking on that running back. And then the other thing about it, you know, because now you're down your top center. You're down to your third-string left tackle. Ohio State also got a little banged up against Tennessee. The right guard had to miss some time. Right?
Right tackle, ankle sprain.
Right. So there's some questions about, do I think those guys are going to play? 100%. They're offensive linemen. You don't really need an ankle to play offensive line. You'll be okay. Mm-hmm. You tape that thing up and you go figure it out. That's just how old linemen operate. But that doesn't mean that you're at 100% healthy and that you're going to get tested early in this game, I think. I think that if Oregon is able to get home with just their four D linemen, which I think they will be able to do, you're not going to have to see those exotic blitzes that Oregon has to run at times when they aren't getting home. They can sit back into coverage, which you need to do against this wide receiver group that Ohio State has. So I think the game is going to be won between the offensive line of Ohio State and the D-line of Oregon. And to me, I like that matchup to go Oregon's way.
Yeah, there's a gamble, though, that you are playing if you think you can get home with four, because we saw that with Tennessee, right?
Right.
Tennessee said, we are going to drop coverage. We're not going to double team Emeka Ogbuka or Jeremiah Smith. We are going, or Tate. We are going to drop seven into coverage and try to get home with our front four. And all that led to was the run game for Ohio State. And I think this is an advantage for Oregon. You saw what Ohio State's best shot was offensively, what they're most comfortable with, what they feel they need to do to win, because there is no – your back is against the wall, especially after the way that Michigan game went, right? Mm-hmm. And Tennessee's unwillingness for a majority of that game, or until the game got out of hand – to bring more than four is what ended up dooming them. And I think that what you saw from Michigan, that's the blueprint, right? It's bracket Jeremiah Smith, try to take him away,
right,
with double coverage, bring more than four, and here's where Oregon had a lot of success and where you have that rotation that you're talking about with the offensive line. It's going to be with, all right, we're going to bring five, but you don't know where they're coming from. Right?
Yeah, they do a good job in that mint defense. Like, as an O-lineman, my worst fear is not having a guy over me. Like, I hate that. I want a guy over me. Even if it's Jordan Burch, I want him in a five technique because I know he's coming. And I know he's going to come into one of these gaps more than likely. What Oregon likes to do when they do bring pressure is they walk their two middle linebackers up into the A gaps, and they walk their two outside backers, and they'll put them on the outside or some variation of that. They'll bring a lot of their linebackers to the line of scrimmage. And as an offensive lineman, I have to get depth as quick as possible, and then I have to go through my MDM, so my most dangerous man, who am I supposed to take? If I'm left gap responsible, who's going to end up in this left gap? If I'm right gap or man responsible, who's the most dangerous man and who's the man that I'm leaving to the running back? And that can be extremely difficult. And don't get me wrong, like I said, I don't think that Oregon will necessarily have to bring a lot of blitz. You can't go a whole game without blitzing. That's just not how this defense works. The one thing that I will say, though, is I think Tennessee and I think Ohio State kind of showcase this. I think Tennessee thought more highly of their secondary than they should have. Tennessee's secondary didn't get tested at all. Like, if you think about it, the best quarterback that they played was Jalen Milroe throughout the year. You could maybe throw in Carson Beck in there as well. But here's the thing. Jalen Milroe has the wide receivers, but he's banged up. He doesn't look good in that game. He missed a lot of easy throws to a lot of open receivers. When you go against Georgia and Beck made a lot of the throws, but Georgia doesn't have many wide receivers where you're like, oh, geez, that guy scares me. He scares me going deep. He scares me, you know, across the middle. And so what I think, when you look at this Oregon secondary, they've been tested. In fact, they've been tested by this offense. And you can make the argument they have the best two wide receivers in the country on the same team, right? They have the best tandem, I should say. And so Oregon's going to have to make their adjustments on how they cover these wide receivers, because Kelly's going to have his adjustments to how Oregon covered them the first time. But I think that the secondary can have confidence in the fact that you were able to not stop, because you're not going to stop Ibuka, you're not going to stop Smith, but you can make it more difficult for them to get theirs. And I think Oregon did a great job of that in the secondary the first time they played.
I think that a couple of things that we saw with Penn State especially, and the teams that have had success against Oregon because of that you mentioned walking up the linebackers, it takes a little bit of time, right? Mm-hmm. They do a lot of disguising of where that pressure is going to come from. Tempo is where offenses have had success against Oregon, because they like to get set, they like to get a lay of the land, and we saw Penn State, they found rhythm when they were running that up-tempo offense. It wore Tyler Warren into the ground, but that's not the heart and soul of this Ohio State team. So that's going to be an interesting one for me. And we know Chip Kelly, he's got the tempo variance in his offense where he will pull that string back, and he has four different tempos that he'll run that offense at, where he'll go pedal to the metal and then back off of it, and he tries to catch you in mismatches and try to catch you off balance there. I think that you make a good point about Tennessee secondary, because that was one of their concerns heading into the year, was how good their secondary was, and they held up throughout the course of the year. But I also will say that Oregon has been tested dude for dude on the outside, similarly to Tennessee, with, as you mentioned, Alabama's wide receiver core pretty dang good. Oregon, the best quarterback Oregon has seen this year is probably Will Howard, right?
Him or Altmyer, maybe? Like, those are your probably best. Well, no, Aller.
That Drew kinda Aller. Makes the point, though. Right?
Drew Aller's probably. I would say Aller's the best.
I'd say Will Howard is right. I would give Howard a nod over Aller, but it's close. And to the point being that, you know, Oregon has been tested by this Ohio State team the first time around. They're not going to attack Oregon the same way either.
No.
And that is one thing that Oregon had the advantage of, being at home, watching that first round and saying, all right, this is their best shot. This is what they're most comfortable with. I expect from Ohio State a lot of tempo. They're going to try to lean on the run game and catch Oregon, because that's where Chip is most comfortable with. And then what did that lead to? We saw Jeremiah Smith or Emeka Ebuka or Tate running free down the middle of the field. And I said this after, you know, the first round matchup. It looked like Chip's offense, where you're going, how is that guy wide open? It's because it's the setup to that payoff being that deep shot down the field. That all hinges, though, in what you were talking about with being able to get pressure on Will Howard, because if he has time, he will pick you apart and he will beat you. That's going to be the interesting part about this game defensively. On the offensive side for Oregon, I think we've seen some growth, but there is obviously going to be some questions, because will Ohio State do what they did the first time around? We'll get to that next. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
Yeah, Spider-Man and freezing, full effect.
You ready, Ron?
I'm ready.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan. Girl, I must want
you. I sense something strange. All right, we're talking Oregon, Ohio State, the Rose Bowl coming up. Less than a week away, New Year's Day down in Pasadena, the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. And we talked about Oregon's defense in the matchup against the Buckeyes' offense, but there were a few things that over the course of the first game on October 12th, and the way that that matchup played out, Oregon offensively, I don't know, and this is going to be the bajillion-dollar question, right? Is we saw Evan Stewart go off in that game. We saw Tez be the threat and kind of menace in the way that they motioned him and moved him around. That was just fascinating to watch Dylan Gabriel say, all right, unlock cheat code, and it's number 7, Evan Stewart.
Right.
I'm not sure if we will see Ohio State defend Oregon anywhere close to the way they tried to the first time, because there were a couple things at play. Oregon's offensive line played a damn near flawless game protection-wise. I mean, you did not hear JT Tumalau's name or Jack Sawyer's name, and that was a dude-on-dude. They were money. And that, look, to be fair, Ohio State, when they have matched up against very good offensive lines, they have been neutralized up front. I mean, those guys have been. But for Oregon, can you play the flawless game that you played the first time around? And there's going to be points to be had. The other thing is, what does it look like in the back end as far as nobody had tested Denzel Burke all season long? And Will Stein, Dylan Gabriel said, all right, we're going to go ahead and try it. And they went deep on him 2 times, and they had success twice. And that was the first time that we'd seen him be tested in that way all season long. And so that's going to be the fascinating part for me, is that I don't think if you watch in the way that Ohio State defended Tennessee, they loaded up against the run. And we didn't get a good read on what the best shot of Tennessee or Ohio State's defense is in that game because of the injuries that when Sampson goes down, Dante Thornton goes down, Nico playing in a 14-0 hole out off the basically the onset of the game, right? You know that what his strength is having a run game to supplement him being able to take shots because he's a freshman quarterback back there. And it allowed Jim Knowles and that Ohio State defense to play just loose and with their hair on fire. And that is going to be the fascinating part for Ohio State's defense and how they attack Oregon's offenses. We saw what the Ohio State offense best shot was, and that was Chip Kelly getting back in his bag and looking like the Chip that was calling plays at Oregon, using tempo and running the ball, false pulls to create movement from linebackers, and replacing with the plus one with your quarterback even running the ball and Will Howard. I mean, you saw two backs on the field at the same time in motion kind of to leverage a defense with a false puller and just alleyways to run through that were a mile wide, right? The defense for Ohio State, I don't think we saw what their best shot was because Tennessee was forced to play uncomfortably. And they looked very uncomfortable throughout the course of that game in Columbus.
I almost feel like the first time that they played, Knowles and that defense kind of expected the D-line to whoop up on Oregon. Like, remember, the narrative around that Oregon O-line around that time is they can't handle it in big games. This isn't that far removed from the stinker that they laid against Idaho and one of the more worst first halves that you can watch as an offensive lineman against Boise State. Now, it felt like Oregon had righted the ship for us, right? Because we're watching every game. We're watching the All-22, so we have an understanding of like, okay, Oregon made a move here. They made a change. Mm-hmm. They have a new center. He's now got everyone on the same page. They're fixing the mistakes that they have made, and it clearly showed, I felt like, against Michigan State and against UCLA and Oregon State in the run game and in the passing game. But nationally, it still felt like there was a narrative around Oregon. They're not as good as everyone kind of expected them to be, and it's because of this offensive line. Well, you're not going to trick anyone now with how good your O-line is. You were a Joe Moore Award finalist for offensive line. You were one of three, right? And you've done it for the last 3 years. So what I believe...
and had another Heisman quarterback
100%.
Finalist. Like that, and look... Your offensive line is a big reason why your quarterback gets to New York.
Yes, and the continued success that they've had through multiple different offensive line coaches, right? Yeah. I think Knowles and that Ohio State defense, they dial up a lot more pressure. And I think you're going to see a lot more exotic fire zones, a lot of blitzing, almost like he might go into Oregon film, right? Or go into Dan Lanning's time when he was at Georgia. Because what Lanning likes to do, and Lanning has done a good job of this, and LaPoy has done this as well, obviously, is as an offensive lineman, I want to see who's coming to go against me. I want to see a down D lineman. I would rather see Micah Parsons right lined up next to me than two linebackers lined up over me, because there's a possibility that I could pick the wrong one, right? Yep. Where the linebackers are just reading the offensive lineman. If I step to the left, that guy's going to drop in coverage. The guy on the right's coming. If I step to the right, it's the opposite of what's happening. So I would expect Ohio State to start dialing up more pressure and more exotic looks because they weren't able to get home last time. Yep. And that's where you see a lot of the success of these defensive linemen trying to find ways to create one-on-one matchups for Jack Sawyer, for JT, and I'm not even going to attempt his last name, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
Thank you. When those guys are getting one-on-one matchups, they've had success and they've found a way to hit home. Now, I think the one calling card that Oregon can lean on is how good your tackles have played. Like, Connor Lee went up against the best defensive lineman in all of college football in Abdul Carter and shut him down to the point where Penn State moved him and they were using him more as like a stand-up linebacker where he was almost kind of the read player. He was the spy to Dylan Gabriel, and he would just wait until Gabriel moved, whether he was going to move to the right or to the left, and then Abdul Carter would come blitzing because he got dominated by your tackles. So you're going to have to lean on your tackles to have another big game, especially in the passing game, to allow Dylan Gabriel the time to find his open wide receivers.
I will be very interested to see the use of Tez, Noah Whittington, and Jordan James in create, because if you're going to start playing that spy, right, the one way that you do it is you leverage it with motion, and Will Stein does a really good job with that.
Right.
And that is something that I think is everybody is kind of reacting, and I think it's a proper reaction, if we're being quite frank here. It's proper reaction for Ohio State to get the buzz that they are getting right now because of the warts that they showed against Michigan and then the way their O-line played. I do think that they are getting a rightful pop because it was impressive and they were doing things that we didn't think that they were capable of doing, especially against a really good front seven in Tennessee. So I think there is there's a pop there for Ohio State's offense, and it's justified and rightfully so. I also think that Oregon, and I think maybe people are forgetting the explosiveness of this offense when Tez is healthy and when Tez is the feature of the way that they use him in motion. I call it his gravity, the gravity of Tez Johnson and what he forces every level of the defense to do when he gets put in motion. And the same can be said with Noah Whittington and Jordan James as well, because we've seen those guys lined up outside, in the slot, in the backfield, shifting to either one of those three positions, and Oregon still runs with rhythm in everything that they're doing on the offensive side of the ball. So it's not just the gravity of Tez anymore. It's the gravity of the backs as well, because of how effective they have been, not just running the ball, but with as receivers as well. This is not to say that Oregon is going to run away with this game, or it's going to be, you know, all ducks and it's 100%. This could be a damn good football game again, because you have two juggernauts that are playing in the quarterfinals. For everybody that was complaining about the matchups that were had in the first round of the playoffs, this is going to be a matchup that everybody's saying the 12-team playoff, this is what you wanted to see. And is the path a hell of a lot tougher for the number one overall seed? Yeah, it is. Think they're going to start tweaking that as the playoff continues. But this is exactly the matchups that we wanted to see in the college football playoff, and it comes in the round of eight.
I don't think it's hyperbole to predict that the winner of this game will win the whole thing. Like, I don't think that's wrong, barring a big significant injury.
Yeah.
Obviously, it feels like Penn State has the easiest path, at least to the semifinals. Now, stranger things have happened, right? Just ask James Franklin or any Penn State fan in the James Franklin era. But if I'm Oregon and you're going to face Ohio State, this might be the best time to do it, in the fact of you are at 100% health. There's no fluke injury or someone gets beat up or banged up. And Ohio State, they already played a game, so obviously they're not as well rested as you. You could also have the rest versus rust kind of debate there. But the thing about it with Ohio State is, like we talked about with the offensive line, they already have some guys that are dinged up, that are scraped up. And yeah, the path might not be on paper the easiest path that you could have as a one seed, and you should have the easiest path. But you still have to play the football games. And so if I'm Oregon, I'd rather play Ohio State when I'm as healthy as I possibly could be than possibly play them later on down the road.
Yep.
And if you are Oregon and you're an Oregon fan, I would probably invest in Pepto-Bismol or other avenues to help calm yourself down, because it's going to be a very back-and-forth Rose Bowl. This is going to be the game of the season, I believe.
That's what it's all about, my man. All right, let's get to our worst day on the web, which sometimes it can be a really good day. This was a number that it floored me when I saw, and I wonder if it's as surprising to everybody else. And it comes out of the holiday season. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
It's time for today's worst day on the web. with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Oh, really? That sucks.
All right, got a double dip for our worst day on the webs today. The first one, this popped up on my feed, and I asked my wife this question, and I want to ask you. How much do you think Mariah Carey makes every year on All I Want for Christmas Is You?
I bet you she makes it, like, to the point where she would never have to work again. So, I don't know, upwards of 10 to 15 million?
Every year for, like, a month run.
Dude,
no,
that's all
it's
you
not,
hear.
It's not that big. This is the 30th anniversary of that song this year. She has made over $60 million since it debuted in 1994. She makes, off of royalties alone, annually $2.6 million off of that song.
Wow, I actually would have thought it was higher.
You thought it would be more? I think, yeah. 2.6 for 1 month of airplay every year. I think that's good. That's amazing.
Here's the thing. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm not out here like, well, she could have done better. But, like, think about it. That's all you hear.
Yeah.
All month long.
It's a great
song, though.
And a
bunch of heathens start playing it like in the middle of November anyways.
Do you see her on the old Netflix game, the pregame?
Yeah, she did all right.
Dude, Mariah Carey?
She was fine.
Yeah. Yes, I know. She is fine. She's 55 years old.
I know. She did fine.
She looked amazing.
Well, I was talking about her singing.
Well, her singing, too. Mariah Carey's got pipes, but I'm sitting there going, 55? My goodness.
I'm over here thinking we're talking about her singing, and you're talking
about
that,
how
she
too. It was incredible.
No, she was great. She looked great. I was impressed with Beyonce, though.
Yeah, Beyonce. I think it was a shot, though, at Houston. Not only... Everybody was like, "Oh, it reminded me of the Cowboys," and I was like, "Yeah, it did." I think that was everybody's first. What?
The album is called Cowboy Carter.
Right, but the big star that they were coming out of—it's like you're in Houston. Maybe not have the star logo everywhere. Everybody was dressed like a Cowboys cheerleader, but whatever. I was fine with it. Beyonce was great, but here's the bridge too far.
Okay.
Post Malone, noted Cowboys fan. You brought after it was everything was like everybody's like complaining about a star. It's like you're in Texas. It's the Lone Star State. Okay, they're dressed in white like Cowboys cheerleaders. Yeah, whatever. What colors you want them to wear? When they brought out Post Malone, I was like, okay, now I understand all the Cowboys hate here.
But he's in the song.
The great thing that I saw. Do you see that denim truck?
Yeah,
they had the old jort bed truck out there. It's all denimed up. That was badass.
Well, that's Post Malone. If you want to kick out Post Malone, you don't get the denim truck. That
you
was
don't get,
his
you
whole
don't,
thing.
You don't get the old jort bed? Yeah, dude, man.
I want a denim truck. That'd be sick.
You're dang right. You're dang right.
I needed more Shibuzi, though. I'll tell you that right now.
We did?
Yeah. Shibuzi's good.
Are you
a Shibuzi hater?
No. I just don't know any other song that Shibuzi has ever made.
You know Bar Except, Song.
Well, let me finish. I don't know another Shibuzi song outside of Bar Song.
I have a couple different
songs. Don't know if I've ever heard anything else from Shibuzi.
Oh, you should check out his catalog. You've got a long drive coming up. You can listen to it on the way back.
And every time I hear, I just think of Tipsy, the song Tipsy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he just made Tipsy a country song. Which I'm for. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Shout out to, was it Jaquan? Didn't he?
I think it's Jaquan.
Teen drinking is very bad. I got a fake ID, though.
Dude, that's a classic high school song right there.
Yeah. And then start singing about a club.
Yes, right. Yeah.
There you go.
None of us were getting into.
Got a fake ID, though.
Just got that song.
Here's my other worst day on the web. Why are people mad at Eric Dickerson? Do you see what Eric Dickerson said today?
Yeah, he said that he doesn't want him to break his record.
Eric Dickerson was asked about Saquon Barkley being 268 yards away from breaking his record. by the Los Angeles Times. And he said, I don't think he'll break it, but if he breaks it, do I want him to break it? Absolutely not. I don't pull no punches on that, but I'm not whining about it. He had 17 games to do it. Hey, football is football. Ooh, yes.
Sounds like you're whining.
That's the way I look at it. If he's fortunate to get over 2,000 yards and get the record, it's great. It's a great record to have. We brought this up, that Eric Dickerson, his record of 2,105 yards in 16 games, it would be done on more carries than Saquon Barkley.
Oh.
If Saquon's pace continues. If Saquon continued on his pace, he would do it on fewer carries. More games, but less carries. How do we feel about that?
I think it's more impressive Saquon doing it now because the game is completely different. You don't run the football the way that you used to back when Dickerson was playing. You're lucky now if you're a feature back, let alone a back that gets, 30 carries a game. Not that that's what Saquon's getting. So to me, when the game has changed in this way, it's more impressive. It's more impressive that he's doing it in less carries. I don't fault Dickerson for saying this. Like, it's the same thing that we talked about in the very first segment. You don't let your son win easy.
Nope.
You make sure he knows the deal. You don't let your cousins win when there's a significant age gap. At least I don't. I make him earn it, right? Dickerson wants him to have to earn it. And I get why he wants to hold on to that record. That's a cool thing to have. Hey.
And I'm very proud of it.
And he should be. 100. Yep. Jinx, you owe me a Coke. It's one of those things that you should be proud of. It's an incredible accomplishment, an accomplishment that I would have thought would never be touched with the way that the NFL is going and how they run the football. But if Saquon Barkley beats him, like, who cares? Like, he did it in more games. So what? He still beat him. It's not fault that he gets more games.
And Eric Dickerson did it in 16, and a lot of guys, Jim Brown, may have had records in 14 games that he would have had. But right now, Saquon Barkley is projected to have 356 carries for 2,083 yards. So if you want to go how many carries, that would probably be, for him to get the record on his averages, he'd probably need 370 carries to break Eric Dickerson's record. Mm-hmm. Eric Dickerson did it on 379 carries. So he would be 9 carries fewer for Barkley to break the record.
Well, and even if he ends up, let's say that Philly, because I don't put this past Sirianni, he's already tried to get Saquon the single game Philly record for rushing yards. What if Sirianni just says, I don't care, we're going to run the ball 60 times and make sure that Barkley gets this record? And let's say that that's what Saquon wants to do. It doesn't diminish the record in my eyes.
Like, nope.
If Dickerson wants to complain about it, well, O.J. Simpson did it in 14 games. Right? Like, correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. O.J. Simpson is the only running back to ever get 2,000 yards in 14 games. Everyone else needed more than 14 games. And I understand, like, I just went on a rant about how the game has changed. But if we're going to gatekeep it to the point of, like, well, we only count it if it's the least amount of games from the first person that said it, then no one would have ever passed O.J. Simpson's record. And we'd still be talking about O.J. Simpson being the all-time single-season rushing leader, but we're not. So who cares if he does it in more games? Who cares if he does it in more carries?
Do you know what I want to see? Mm-hmm. I want to see Saquon Barkley rush for 500 yards in Week 18.
Be awesome.
Because they play the Giants in Week 18. The last game of the season will be against his former team, and he didn't want to run for the record early in the year. Saquon Barkley, run for the record against the New York Giants. I would love that and watch everybody get fired because Mr. Mara, everybody just bring up that same clip from Hard Knocks that we've seen a million times now. If Saquon Barkley goes to the Eagles, sets the NFL rushing record, and breaks every NFL rushing record in a single game against them to finish out the year, I'm going to be here for all of it. All of it! With that said, the Vancouver Ford text line, making a good point. He could probably break that record this weekend because it looks like it's going to be the Kenny Pickett show. And it's going to be feed Saquon, feed Saquon, feed Saquon against the Dallas Cowboys. All right. 503-864-6326. That's the Vancouver Forward text line. This is Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
We talked briefly about Oklahoma losing to Navy in the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl. Question. Question.
Answer.
How do people feel about Alabama getting snubbed now that the team that beat them by 21 just lost to Navy? Should they still have been in?
Well, no, they shouldn't have been in, but
they should have been in the first place.
People are still going to fight because they have water that they have to carry, whether it's for their network or for the conference that helped them gain their popularity or where they're at. Sometimes it's for whoever they're working for. Sometimes they're just a crazy person that's always going to side with an SEC team.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Alabama, you see Nick Saban has had a retort to Shane Gillis.
You mean Alabama Jones?
Yeah. What a great bit. Nobody comes at Nick Saban like that. And he has responded. He went on the McAfee show.
Yeah.
And his response to Pat McAfee of Shane Gillis calling him in Alabama Jones and saying that he cheated, which I just love that somebody said it to one of these coaches' faces, right? Of they all knew what the old you know operating procedure was for college football. Like before NIL, there was the bag man. There's literally books written about the bag. It's called the bag man. Great read. And there's like a whole subculture of bag men that used to go around the SEC and around college football at large, but Gillis like being open about it, like, oh yeah, nobody got paid in the SEC. You could see Saban was seething. And I love Saban's response to McAfee. I understand that Shane Gillis is a comedian and he was trying to be funny. My daughter loves him, so at least somebody in our family likes the guy. That's a great way to come back on that one. I mean, he's probably been thinking about that for a few days, but that is, I'm glad Nick Saban is coming back like that. And you know he's pissed about it.
Oh, yeah. He was upset in the moment. I think if he could have, he would have fought Shane Gillis right then and there.
If he knew there was no live mics around, to be a fly on the wall when they went to break, because I bet you could hear a pin drop on that set when Gillis was like, all right, guys, well, see you guys later.
Oh, big gulps, huh?
What did ESPN expect, though? You bring Shane Gillis on to College Game Day, you're going to get fireworks. You're going to get fireworks.
I just love that he had the guts to say it. But the other thing that's funny about it, you think Notre Dame wasn't paying players, Shane? Come on now. Why can't everyone just be honest? Why can't we just be honest?
Well,
Nick
no, that's
Saban,
the thing.
Own what you did. Who? Like, they're not going to take your championships away.
Everybody, this is college football, Will, is that
be honest.
Everybody else's favorite school was doing it the wrong way. Your school wasn't, though.
I can guarantee Central wasn't.
Southern wasn't either, man.
There's no bag men in D2 and NAIA.
Yeah, it's purity.
We were clean.
Love of the game. Love of the game right there. No bag men. If somebody was getting a bag when I was in college, it wasn't a very big bag. It was. I don't even know if you could call it a bag. It would have been like a Ziploc.
McDonald's.
We had to pay for the weight room 1 year to use the weight room 1 year. It was anti-bag.
You know who the bag? You were the bag man for
yeah,
the presidents
so.
And coaches.
I guess so. Like, Yeah, that raised some red flags.
Like, hold on, wait a minute. I played with guys who got all jacked up when we only had to pay half price for a backpack.
That's what I'm talking about.
They were like, dude, normally this is full price. This rocks.
Yeah, closest thing to a benefit that I got in school was I found out that the Jack in the Box, if your order wasn't done in 2 minutes, then you got your food for free.
That wasn't football-wise, though.
No, that was just for everybody at the time could do that. And so, I mean, that was, we had, the clock was running right when you made that order. That was the closest thing to an extra benefit that we got.
That's awesome.
I got a ride home from the bar owner. Is that an extra benefit? He was like, there's no way you're driving.
I rode in a car, not driven by a booster.
And I didn't even get to ride inside the car. I got in the back of his truck.
Oh, you were in the bed? I got offered a drink from a booster. That happened one time. Well,
hey, see, now we're talking the impermissible benefits here. This is what I'm talking about.
I got a very quick, absolutely, you will not have that from a coach.
Well, it's the thought that counts, right?
Hey, maybe he learned that at Southern. That coach bounced around a couple places.
Oh, man. All right. 2 hours in the books. Coming up in hour number three, Jim Harbaugh's at it again. We have to, at some point, we're putting it off as long as we can, discuss Thursday Night Football last night. We do have a firing in the NBA from the coaching ranks, though. Danny and Dusty, an Ortner and Dusty edition on The Fan.